Imagine that we are still in that kitchen. You walked in last time, and you found a recipe on the counter, and you followed it, and you made scrambled eggs. The recipe was the program. You were the one reading it, and doing the work with your own two hands. But for the rest of this show, you are not going to be the cook. The cook is going to be a very strange and very specific thing. A machine. A computer. Now, the strange thing about this cook is that it does not speak any human language. It does not know what an egg is, has never seen a stove, has never tasted anything. It has no concept of breakfast or hunger or evening light through a kitchen window. It does not know what cooking is. The cook is, in fact, completely alien to everything you know about the world. What the cook does have is two extraordinary qualities. It is extremely fast. And it is extremely literal. It can carry out millions of instructions per second, and it will do them exactly as written without ever getting tired, without ever forgetting, without ever guessing. And what it understands, the only thing it understands, is a long sequence of small numbers. That is its entire vocabulary. Numbers in a particular order. If you want this cook to help you, you have a problem. You wrote your recipe in English. The cook does not read English. The cook reads numbers. Someone or something has to stand between you and the cook and translate. That something is called the compiler. And the compiler is one of the most important characters in this whole show. This is Rust Gently, a patient introduction to how computers actually work and to one particular language for talking to them. I am your host. This is episode 2, Inside the Machine. Welcome back. Today, we're going to take a look at what is actually happening on the other side of that piece of paper. What does the computer do with your recipe? Who is doing the translating? What does the translated version look like? And once it is translated, where does it live? And how does the machine actually do the work? I promise you that what is on the other side of all of this is not as complicated as people sometimes make it sound. There's a tradition in software of using mysterious vocabulary to make this stuff feel impressive. We're not going to do that. We're going to use plain words and a few honest metaphors. And by the end of this episode, you'll have a mental picture clear enough that nothing about software will feel inscrutable again. So, back to our strange cook, the one who only understands numbers. You hand your recipe, written in English, to a translator. The translator's name is the compiler. The compiler reads your recipe carefully from top to bottom. It does two jobs at the same time, and both of them matter. The first thing the compiler does is check your recipe for mistakes. This is the part most people do not expect. The compiler does not just blindly translate. It reads your recipe like a careful copy editor with very high standards. If you said put the pan on the stove without specifying which burner, the compiler might stop and ask you about it. If you said pour the eggs into the pan, but earlier in the recipe you never actually mention a pan, the compiler will catch it. If your recipe contradicts itself in any way, the compiler will refuse to translate any of it until you fix the contradiction. This is the role of the compiler that most people new to programming find surprising. And often deeply frustrating at first. They expect the computer to do its best with whatever they give it. Instead, the compiler stops and says, in effect, I see what you are trying to do, but it does not quite make sense yet. Here is exactly the spot where it stops making sense. Please fix that. Then I will continue. If you have ever heard a programmer talk about fighting the compiler, this is what they mean. The compiler is being a careful, patient editor, is saying no repeatedly until everything fits together cleanly. To someone in a hurry that feels like an obstacle, to someone who is learning, the compiler is the best teacher you could ask for because it does not let you ship something that does not make sense. It catches you before the cook does anything dangerous with bad instructions. Different programming languages have different compilers with different levels of strictness. The strict ones, like Rust, check very carefully and say no a lot, especially in the beginning. The looser ones, like Python, do less of this checking up front and instead let the cook discover the problem at the moment of cooking, which is later and often much worse. The second thing the compiler does, once it is satisfied that your recipe is correct, is the actual translation. It takes your English recipe and produces a long sequence of small numbers, exactly the kind of numbers the cook can understand. That sequence is called machine code, and it is what the computer actually runs. You, the recipe writer, never see the machine code. You do not need to. The compiler hands it off to the cook. The cook does the work, and the result, whatever it was supposed to be, comes out somewhere you can see it. A line of text on your screen. A file written to a disk. A message sent over the network. The recipe took effect, but you never had to think in the language the cook actually speaks. Let me say a word about what machine code actually looks like, just so you have a picture of it in your head. Imagine that you're watching the cook work, and instead of seeing the cook crack an egg and whisk it, you see an instruction sheet of pure numbers. Each line is a tiny command. Move the number that is in slot 17 into a fast access space. Add the number that is in slot 18 to it. Write the result back into slot 19. Check whether the result is greater than zero. If it is, jump ahead to instruction 104. Otherwise, continue with the next instruction. That is more or less what machine code looks like. Tiny commands, each doing almost nothing on its own, executed millions of times per second, accumulating into the program you actually care about. Loading a web page, generating a chart, training a model, sending a message. Every piece of software you have ever used is made of these small numerical commands, running in vast quantities very quickly. It is worth knowing that different kinds of computers speak slightly different dialects of machine code. The chip in a modern Mac speaks a dialect called ARM, which is also what your phone speaks. The chip in many older computers and in most cloud servers speaks a different dialect called x86. They have the same general idea with slightly different vocabulary. This is why software has to be compiled separately for the platform it is going to run on. If you wrote your recipe in Rust and you wanted it to work on a Mac and on a phone and on a server, the compiler would run several times, producing one machine code translation for each of those platforms. Same recipe, different cook dialects. You never have to learn machine code yourself. The compiler handles all of that for you. But it is good to know it exists because it tells you what your recipe is actually doing to the world. The other thing your cook is doing constantly while it runs your recipe is reading from and writing to memory. Memory in a computer is something like a very long hallway full of numbered boxes. Each box has a number that identifies it, and each box can hold a small piece of information. The program, as it runs, asks for boxes. The program writes things into boxes. The program reads things back out of boxes. The cook does almost nothing else. If you have ever heard the word RAM, written RAM, that is what we are talking about. It stands for random access memory. The word random just means the cook can reach any box quickly. It does not mean the boxes are arranged randomly. They're very orderly. Random access just means the cook does not have to scan through them in order to find what it wants. Now, here is the thing about memory, and this is, I think, the single most important sentence in this entire episode. Most of the serious bugs in software, the ones that crash services and leak credit cards and freeze your laptop, live in memory, not in the recipe, and how the recipe used the boxes. A program might ask for box 47, store something there, and then later forget that it had written something there and write something different on top of it. Some other part of the program was expecting the original value, and now it gets the new one and things go subtly wrong. Or a program might give up its claim on a box, telling the operating system it is done with it, and then later go back and read from that box anyway. The box now belongs to someone else, with someone else's data inside it. The program reads it. It may crash. It may continue and quietly produce wrong results. It may, in the worst cases, leak the contents of that box to an attacker who knew exactly how to provoke this. These are old bugs. They have been around for as long as we have had computers. They're also, by some studies, responsible for more than two-thirds of all serious security vulnerabilities in software written in the older systems languages, like C and C++. They're not rare. They're the dominant failure mode. Most programming languages handle this by giving you a kind of cleaning service that runs in the background, called a garbage collector. The garbage collector watches which boxes are still in use. And as soon as no part of the program is paying attention to a box anymore, it takes the box back and makes it available for someone else. This keeps things tidy, and it prevents most of the worst bugs. But it has a cost. The cleaning service has to interrupt the cook periodically to do its work, and during those moments, your program is paused. For most programs, you do not notice the pauses. For programs where every millisecond matters, those pauses are a real problem. This is where Rust, the language this show is named after, becomes genuinely interesting. I'm not going to teach you any Rust yet. We are still building up the picture. But here is the promise Rust makes, and I want you to hold on to it, because it is the reason all of this matters. Rust says, "If you let me, I will not let your recipe contain any of those memory bugs in the first place. I will read your recipe so carefully that the moment I see a way you could write to a box that is no longer yours, or read from a box that has been freed, or share a box between two parts of the program in a way that would cause them to step on each other, I will stop. I will not translate the recipe. I will tell you exactly where the problem is. I will refuse to move forward until you fix it. And because I will have caught all of that before your program ever ran, I will not need a cleaning service running in the background. There are no pauses. No garbage collector. The boxes are freed at exactly the right moment, every time, because the rules of who owns which box are clear, and the compiler enforced them at translation time. That is the deal Rust offers. It is also, in one form or another, the reason every major technology company in the world is now writing parts of their most important software in Rust. The Linux kernel, the heart of nearly every cloud server and every Android phone, accepted Rust as a second language in 2022, the first such edition in three decades. Microsoft is rewriting components of the Windows kernel. Amazon Web Services runs every Lambda call inside a Rust micro VM. Cloudflare replaced their entire web proxy fleet with a Rust replacement called Pingora that now serves over a trillion requests per day. None of this happened by accident. It happened because the trade Rust offers safety without a cleaning service was a trade that had not been on the table before. So, let's put it all together in one picture. You write a recipe in a programming language. The compiler reads your recipe, catches mistakes you would not have caught on your own, and translates correct recipes into machine code. The machine code is a long sequence of tiny number commands. The machine runs those commands, reading and writing memory, until the recipe is done. Out comes the result, somewhere you can see it. A page on screen, a file on a disk, a message in transit. Every programming language works roughly this way. The differences between them are in how careful the compiler is, in how much it lets the cook discover only at the moment of cooking, and in how the program manages memory. Rust sits on one specific end of that spectrum, a very careful compiler, very few surprises at cook time, no cleaning service required. We will spend the rest of the show learning to write recipes in that language. Three things to remember before we close. The compiler is a translator and an editor. It checks your recipe carefully, refuses to translate broken recipes, and produces the machine code the cook actually runs. Memory is a long hallway of numbered boxes where the cook reads and writes almost everything, and almost all serious software bugs live there. In Rust's promise, the reason it exists is that the compiler can catch the entire family of memory bugs before your program ever runs, with no runtime cleaning service required, and with no performance cost for being careful. Next time on Rust, gently, we will talk about why there are so many programming languages in the world, what the differences between them actually amount to, and where on that spectrum Rust ended up sitting. After that, we will tell you the story of how Russ came to exist in the first place and meet, briefly, some of the people who built it. Until then, take good care of yourself. I will see you in the next one.